My name is Dan Brown, and I'm here today again with another A Lens a Day Conversations about Information Architecture. And today it is my great pleasure to chat with the ingenious Tori Podmajerski. I did it. I got through all those syllables.
You did. So many syllables.
Tori,
and
thank you.
Ingenious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. Tori, thank you so much for joining me on this little journey. You wrote a book about content, so I'm going to skew towards content, which turns out overlaps a lot with information architecture. So let's talk process first. When you're thinking about content and you're sort of drawing people in, unfortunately, we have this way of calling people non-designers, like people who are not designers or non-writers, right? But we all do participate in these processes. What is your favorite way to kind of draw people in to the process? What sort of techniques or activities do you do to help people feel like they are part of the creative process?
Yeah, that is a great question. Thank you. And it's funny because to me, I only think about information architecture from a content perspective because I have a long history of arguing with people like, what isn't content? Show me the thing that isn't content here. I'll tell you how that thing is content. And we're all content makers. Like if we are communicating with other entities, including our future selves in an artifact producing way, we are content creators. So one of the big things that I need to do when I first work with people, especially if somehow they found out I wrote a book, is to be like, no, I don't care about your grammar. I'm going to misspeak a lot. I make a lot of typos and I am so not a linguist. Also, commas are hard, right? Like I am an expert in how we use these things because I've practiced a lot and because I've gotten a lot of feedback and a lot of information about how things work. And I've actively looked for that information, consolidated it, learned from it, and improved processes to get better. Also, the world has changed since the first web pages I was making when image tags didn't exist yet. So there's been an awful lot of learning. So one of the first things I do is just ask people questions to answers that they know that I don't. Like, how are you thinking about this problem? Do you even know this is a problem? Sometimes is the immediate thing that comes out of that. But even just to say, hey, I want to make sure we're aligned. How do you think about this? And because I'm usually usually working with people who are deep in their area, whether that's a single product or a particular tool or a vertical, I'm going to them saying, you're the expert in this space. You own your destiny. I can't help you at all until you know what you know. And we can talk about what you know. So that's kind of my process is I draw them out by asking them things only they can know.
That's fantastic. I love that framing of questions. We talk a lot about kind of asking questions, but the idea of what if you ask someone a question that only they can know the answer to, like, how do you think about this? But I want to go back to the first thing that you said, because it's my Friday afternoon here when I'm recording this. And I generally like engaging in some philosophical discussion at the end of my work week. And you said, I have a long history of arguing with people that everything is content. Did I get that right?
Pretty much, yeah. So, I mean, even if that's not exactly what I said, yeah, I'll stand by that.
Who has come closest to potentially convincing you that there is something in the world that is not content? Have you had anyone kind of come close to being like, well, okay, wait, now give me a second. Let me think about this.
Yeah. So here is the philosophical nut I can't crack yet.
Oh, good.
I have an answer to this. It is the extremely nerdy version of if a tree falls in the forest, right? It is the, so getting my physics degree at the University of Washington, there was an awful lot of conversation. And here I am going back quite a ways. So physicists who are watching this, I'm sorry if I'm getting things wrong. There are phenomena that we believe to exist. There are interactions we believe to exist. But unless we describe those interactions, unless we are capturing them in some way or hypothesizing about them in a communicative way, are they themselves content? Is the instance the content itself? And I think probably not. So really, I made this statement, everything, and now here I am the one saying, instances of existence,
you though,
probably not.
That is good stuff. No, that is good stuff. I mean, a hover over a button that just doesn't happen to have a, you know, JavaScript tag that lets me capture that hover. Is that content? I think that's what you're getting at. Like,
yeah, so in a UX sense, absolutely.
Right.
Right. Like, I'm thinking about if the electron spins up or spins down, do we know if we are not discussing the upness or downness? And unless, until it becomes reified as an object of knowledge, then is it even content? So in the UX, if you are hovering over a button and there is no state change, there's no perceptible difference, and it is not logged, or it is not logged, then no, it's not content yet. Yes, the moment that it is content. The documentation on the UI side that says, hey, engineer, I gave you a hover state here.
Right.
What the hell? Then, you know, that is content.
Right.
As is the Slack message of the what the hell and the bug that's filed, et cetera.
Right, right.
But until there is that interaction and that communication of that state change, no.
Look at you. You're arguing with yourself. You, when I asked who was the person who got closest, you were the person who got closest.
Well, I mean, I grew up with these conversations. Because, I mean, literally, I grew up with these conversations because the beginning of XML started with a language called SGML, Standard Generalized Markup Language. And an offshoot of that that generalized it further was HiTime, the hypermedia time-based markup language, ISO 10744.
Wow.
Which my family was involved in editing. And by family, I mean like, my mom, dad, and brother, and I wrote some tech docs for it. Like this, that's how nerdy I am. Yes.
There's no competition. I just want you to know. Like, I mean, I'm basically creating a video series with information architects. So
so that's nothing but competition. Oh my goodness.
We're all one big happy family. How does that influence your process? So let's just bring it back to process. Like what, like, so now we've sort of identified there is this sort of very abstract thing that might not be content, but we're always talking about the potential for content.
Yeah.
What is that? How does that affect your mindset when you're talking to folks?
Yeah, it does all the time, both in the sense of, oh, good heavens, that's overwhelming, right? Like, if everything's content, which is the part that we are talking about? So it's really helped me be very disciplined about saying, I like, how do I narrow the scope and how do I focus on what is the important part of the content to work on right now? And also with this background in SGML and HiTime and XML, you got nothing if you ain't got structure, right? And especially you ain't got semantic structure. And that's really where I'm hard pressed to say, is anything that I've done not based in the information architecture? Like if there isn't a systemic way of looking at this, pretty much nothing I do with the language is going to move a needle because it's all about that that structured way of looking at it.
When folks like me say, distinguish something like content strategy from information architecture, is that a meaningful distinction for you? Do you empathize or understand why that people do make that distinction, or do you see it as utter being just completely misguided? Not to put thoughts in your brain.
What I always have to do is listen very carefully to how they're describing the difference, because that tells me an awful lot about which aspect of content strategy are you talking about and which aspect of information architecture are you talking about. And the information architecture of an entire domain, right, might include a number of different, shall we say, lenses that they might come from, right? And they might be thinking of those very separately. There might even be different groups in a particular organization looking at the information architecture in those different ways, even if it has to be displayed in the same way. Similarly, content strategists might be working on the lens of consistency or governance or delivery or publishing or any number of other ways. So when we're using big umbrella words like this, and people are saying, yeah, but the difference is, it's the next words that are meaningful to me.
Right. So I came to the lens through a back door here. But I do think when we are using any of these tools to look at the work that we're doing, in a sense, we can use those same tools to look at the nature of the work, the approach, the process, even the titles that we call ourselves. So I'll use that to kind of tee up the lens. Can you say which lens we picked and mm-hmm. what it means to you?
I have the lenses here in front of me. At the very beginning of the recording, I was closing my little cabinet here because I keep them close at hand. I have the lens of label concept fit. Because clear concepts do not necessarily have clear labels. And that is such a diplomatic sentence. That is such a diplomatic sentence because frankly, you don't, what you're doing here, how you wrote this is, I would imagine that an early draft of it might have said, your concept isn't clear unless its label is clear, right?
That's possible.
It is possible, but no, a concept can be clear to all of the people using it.
Okay.
Until they go to then explain it to other people right. and they decide on a label for it. And then that label is misunderstood by those other people, or it fits into their worldview in a different way than was anticipated. And then suddenly all of that clarity goes away. And what it also presupposes is that clarity must come before labeling. If you start labeling before it's clear, well, then you've basically made another word for mud. Cool.
So let me challenge you on that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I learned this from a very smart person that everything is content. So given that... all I have is content. That is, all I have is words to represent and understand concepts, right? So because all I have are words or labels to understand concepts, you are going to challenge my challenge. Go.
Just not all content is words.
That's fair.
Right? You might have a diagram that represents that.
Yes.
But the label that represents that diagram might be mud.
Might be mud. So you're saying we can express ourselves clearly through, say, imagery or pictures or illustration or diagram or sound. And yet when we go to then label this idea, mm-hmm. it renders the idea in a new way, right? It sort of sheds new light on the idea.
Absolutely.
And as you and I are looking at a diagram and you say upness and I say downness, we sort of have this kind of moment where we're like, well, does that, in your opinion, does that mean that the concept is not clear or that we have different perceptions of the concept? How does that work?
So what I often do with teams, especially with like naming challenges, and whether this is for a new concept or just on a button or a name for a feature or anything else, is I go, okay. So, and in general, like in my current team, it's people coming to me saying, we have this new thing and here's the terminology we've been using, but we put it in our UI and it doesn't seem to work. Or, you know, yeah, amazing. Or, you know, we came back from user testing and we're getting all this feedback that people are having all these strange ideas about it. And so the very first thing I do is I say, great, what does it mean to you? And I write down my notes. And sometimes things are so complex that I'm like, let me draw a picture of that, which I learned from the brilliant Abby Covert's book, right? Like, let me draw a picture. Is this what you mean about the things? And then maybe I'll point out things like, hey, your words are bringing up this sort of metaphor or multiple metaphors in the same set of things. And I can't figure out how they're related to this. So really, it's not even playing dumb. It's just, hey, I need to be honest about my own level of confusion, which is tough, right? Like, I don't like feeling stupid and feeling like people, really well-intentioned, smart people, are explaining this in really good ways. And I'm all like, huh, I don't get it. But that happens. And I need to take that hit for my users, for their users, and say, and then I'll ask questions like, great, where are they coming from? What have they called this in foundational research? Why are we building this feature at all? What problem does it solve? Like that kind of clarity, so that we can maybe choose the right set of metaphors or a matching set of metaphors, or in some cases to be like, oh, so this drawing that literally sometimes I'm doing with like paper and Sharpies and holding up to the camera is like, you've never looked at your thing this way and you want to go away with this diagram and make it better. Cool. Let's follow up when you have what the drawing is, and then we'll work that out. But though that labeling idea, and actually sometimes we've gone the other way and said, hey, what this label means to me is that I can make this set of assumptions about how it will work. And the look of horror that sometimes you get on your cross-functional team's face is like, oh, we didn't mean that. Like maybe it would do that someday, but it won't do that this year. Oh, then let's not call it that.
One of the implications of this lens, I think, is this idea of trade-offs, where you know that whatever label you pick, it's not going to be perfect, right? Even like, I don't know, the example that popped into my head is like, the label for me is Dan, and even that is not a perfect label for me, right? So we're making, as designers, we're making trade-offs constantly. Can you talk a little bit about, maybe give us an example of where you had to make a trade-off for, there was a lot this label did for us, but there were certain things it didn't do.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a label that we shipped in Xbox in settings in 2013. So I'm going way back into history, but still, it was, I think it was sign in security and passkey. It was the longest frickin' button I think I've ever written. But the settings problem is that we had more than 100 different individual settings, And we did the standard, what everybody thinks of IA, that all AA is like, we did a big card sort based on lots of criteria. And honestly, it works like a charm, but you end up with some categories where you're like, yeah, these things are all related. We did user testing with the just concepts of like, hey, where would you put these? And they always came into the same group. And no, like we could not find a group name that meant all of those things to all the people, because security means something very different when you're in an online gaming world. Like, and sometimes it's network security, sometimes it's personal safety, sometimes it can be all sorts of things. But what we wanted to do is make it super easy to find. Here is how you get to play. And how you get to play is not the right label name. Like, we got really creative with this. And the label that tested best was, I mean, sign in, security, and passkey with commas. Like, what the heck?
I've heard commas are hard too.
Commas. So. And it was the only button that wrapped, like in most of the console. Like, it wrapped to two lines. It was a mess. And it tested the best.
I mean, what that says to me, though, is you are almost unwilling to make the trade-off of an aesthetically pleasing button, because it was so important for the play experience and so essential for, I'm going to say the play experience again, but so essential for making sure that people had a positive experience and that it was something that people looked for. You wanted to get it right there.
Yeah. So this is the thing that keeps the 7-year-old from playing if it's not set up right.
Right.
And so huge. All of the easy help content, all of that needed to be super findable for the 7-year-old and for the parent who never uses the Xbox, right, but who might need to go in and fix the thing.
Yes.
Needed to be very, very findable. So it was one of those things where I was the writer. I worked super closely with my UX partners, but it was ultimately a director level call of, we all hate this button, including the writer, including everybody. And it works so well for this critical blocking path that it's the right trade-off. It does make me want to go and fire up my Xbox and check that setting and see if they've come up with something better in the past 8 years.
Right. I will also do that. you touched on this a little bit earlier, but let's kind of revisit this idea of how do we help other folks on our team look through these lenses. The idea of the lenses precipitated in some ways because I was concerned that people didn't have the tools they needed to do information architecture, and that the practice of information architecture is increasingly not part of educational curricula these days. It's not. People are not paying attention to it as much. I grew concerned that maybe there are folks on the team who need a little bit more help to apply IA thinking to these things. What advice or coaching or mentoring might you give someone with, say, this lens in particular, the label concept fit? How might you help someone kind of look through this lens at their own work?
So here to me is the genius of the lenses. And this is really what I use them for. Like, I have not had actually the opportunity to be like, hey team, let's play it like a card game. Let's do the thing. But what I have done is be like, there's something about this that's bugging me, right? Like, there's something that seems structurally off. And I use it to myself, like, okay, in the categories? Is it, I do the internal work first to be like, which part isn't fitting? Like, where are users blocked? Why is it difficult for me to understand and just stay understanding of what's going on here? And so I try to categorize it. And then I dive in and I'm like, oh yeah, these are the questions in the bullet points. And then I have literally been like, oh, in this review that I know that's coming up, or just pinging them in chat and saying like, hey, I was thinking about this thing you're working on, and I had this question. And then I'm like, typey, typey, read, typey, typey. Because the questions are asked in such a way that opens it up and isn't like, boy, why didn't you think of this? That was dumb. Big miss, which isn't productive and helpful or any of the things that I would want to be with my partners. But just like, hey, I'm a little bit, so we've uncovered this pre-existing meaning for the label. So is the concept you're trying to get across obscured by that pre-existing meaning? Like, could people be trying to apply both at once? And then people go, oh, and maybe I need to defend. Maybe they're thinking I need to defend that. And they start to talk it through and they go, oh yeah, maybe they do think that Dan Brown probably has brown hair. Right?
Do you feel like, you started out your story here by saying like, I sense something is off, right? And I love that because to me, I'm constantly, as someone whose brown hair is increasingly turning gray, I am obsessed with the idea that our experience matters, right? And when you say there's something about this that's bugging me, it's because I know you've got, forgive me, decades of experience to kind of looking at these things, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of going, wait, there's something not fitting here. And I can't put it into words just yet, but I know it's bothering mm-hmm. me. I want to help other folks cultivate that experience. And that's in part what the lens is for. Do you feel like there's a means for teaching folks how to, lens aside or not, like to kind of turn on that radar in a sense of like, what should they be looking for?
So this is actually related to a conversation that I've had with several people hiring for content roles. And they're saying, sometimes I can hire people to work on the words, and I can hire people to work on publishing, and I can hire people to work on these parts, but it's super hard to find somebody who can both work on the execution and work on the overall structure and the actual strategy behind it. And this is a place where I'm almost absolutely always, now that I've said everywhere and nowhere, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me back away from absolutes. However, in terms of can we teach this? Absolutely. And we can, it is definitely a mindset of an orientation towards structure and integrity. And by integrity, I mean detail level to all the way down in a unbroken chain or other structure to its foundations, which for me is always its structure. And I mean, I've already talked about my growing up, like literally if you're in XML, you did not start until you had a document type definition, until you knew what the elements and the attributes were and how those interrelate and what the hierarchy was there. You could not make your content until you had those things because you couldn't describe it. And then later in life, in my physics degree, everything about physics is about describing physical phenomena and interactions in the simplest possible mathematical language. And then coming up with the ideas and the models and how do we test those? So it is an extremely structural view of the world. And that's really the lens that I've been practicing my whole life is does this work at a structural level? And if it doesn't, then is it a matter of, internal brokenness, or is it a matter of there's no structure there, it's all Play-Doh? And both of which is fine, but looking at the world in that way and seeking that structure, definitely something I look for in the UX. And to me, it's the mark of somebody who advances in their UX career is when they're looking at something and saying, that's a cool solution on this page for this moment. What is the expression of that idea in these other ways, in these other moments, in the same user experience?
Tori, that was awesome. Thank you so much. I think we will leave it there. I almost stopped the recording when I meant to unmute. So you can tell it's time for me to step away.
Oh, it's so Friday. Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much. That was really great. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dan. This was an awful lot of fun.